This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. On this show, if you do not know, well, we get into the minds of comedians. Why? Well, because comedians are not who you think they are. There's so much more to us, so much depth to us. And I love the fact that I get to bring the light, get to bring a light to that. And today's guest is a true friend, a real brother.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen. You've called me since 2003.
You shut up, Bill. People don't know that. This is Bill Burr, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, I'm Bill Burr. Now, Kevin Hart was somebody that I thought I was friends with, but I realized quickly that he just needed a spot at Dangerfields. And then he booked a pilot, and I don't think I talked to him again. I had, like, kids, and I didn't hear from you.
Bill Burr, ladies and gentlemen. We're getting into the mind of Bill Burr.
Kevin was late for his own podcast.
Bill, are you ready for this? This is the best part that I think. This is what's mind-blowing that people are going to love. Bill Burr.
Did you have your own name on your fucking sweatshirt?
Well, outside of that, I mean, I don't know
why
you don't.
Kev, we know who you are.
Just in case you didn't, Bill, I wore a shirt to remind you. What's the big fucking deal, man? All right, it's just a shirt.
Hoodie with Kevin Hart. I hand out hoodies to homeless people because I care about downtown LA. Go see Jumanji Part 19. The studio system has ruined you.
Bill is not angry, first of all, to our listeners. Bill is not an angry person. Bill is a very happy person. Bill is a married man. He's a father now. Congrats on that, Bill, by the way.
I got two kids. I had another one. I was going to call you, but I knew you wouldn't return the call.
No.
I don't think my last movie did well enough to have you send over your little Heart of the City fruit basket, you piece of shit.
What are you talking about? I would have sent you a bottle of heart wine from the vineyard. What are you talking about, man? I told you it would have got there. Bill,
I love that you have a vineyard.
Can we tell the people, Bill,
that you and I... out there and stomp on the grapes?
Yeah, I do. So fuck off. I do. Bill and I did a pilot, ladies and gentlemen. We did a pilot for Comedy Central.
Yeah, it was called Heart of the Shitty, and it wasn't picked up.
Let me clear this up. This is before I got big. Bill and I did a show.
You were already starting to blow up. And I remember there was a moment where we were actually going to tour together. We were going to do a black and white tour because I was almost ready to go to theaters. You had just started going to theaters. And then a week later, you went to arenas. And that's when you stopped calling me. When it was, Kev.
I stopped calling you after the show didn't get picked up because I felt like you fucked me. I said, Bill Burr fucked me.
You were going up to the clubs until 4 in the morning and then showing up thinking you're going to Eddie Murphy your way through it and start improvising. You took that whole thing down with you. I'm still bitter about it.
Bill, I would love if we could get our hands.
Opportunity to get screwed over by Viacom.
Do you think I'm willing to bet you, Bill, I can probably get my hands on that pilot? I'm willing to bet you I can, man. I would love to get my hands on that fucking pilot just for you and I, because we can't show it. We can't do shit with it.
How much fun was it? I'm fucking around, but Bruce McCullough, you and me, dude, that was so much goddamn fun.
I will say this, man. Bill Burr, for those who do not know it, lately, as of late, I mean, Bill, you're popping up all over the place as far as acting. But the Staten Island movie, what was the name? Pete Davidson. What was the title of it, Bill?
I don't know. It was called Jumanji Part.
Wasn't called Jumanji. That's my movie. What fuck was it called, man?
Get Hard.
Wasn't that's another one of my movies, Bill?
Wait, I get
the
it.
King
get
of Staten
it.
Island.
Soul Plane with white.
Fuck
people.
Off. That's those are my United movies, Airlines. Bill. God damn it! He said United Airlines. What was it called, Bill?
It's called The King of Staten Island.
The King of Staten Island.
Judd Apatow and Pete Davidson. Judd Apatow, who ruined my friendship with you because you booked his pilot and I never heard from you again. You left me, Kev.
Bill, I'm gonna say in this movie, you did what I knew. Back then when we did that pilot, man, Bill has always been a fucking, you've been a phenomenal comedic actor. And you know, they say that we don't have it. They say as comedians can't, we can't make the transition. A lot of comedians fail in making that transition. I mean, a lot of people say
that specifically. Who don't said put Donald Trump on me. Don't start telling me that people are saying shit.
Listen, what they're doing, I'm telling you what they're saying.
Everybody knows it. You know what? Everybody. I know it. Everybody knows. That's my favorite thing. I use that now on my wife. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows
Everybody knows it. What are you saying? People say it. People fucking say it. Everybody says it.
You know it.
Everybody.
I know it. Everybody says it.
They've said the comedians couldn't act for years. But Bill Burr, you cracked the code. You cracked the fucking code, man. And back then when we did that pilot, the reason why I brought up you during the King of Staten Island, because you did a fucking phenomenal job in that movie. But back when we did that pilot is when I got to see, I was like, yo, Bill can actually fucking act. Bill's good. Because I was coming in, like you said, with the improv, and I'm coming in with all this shit. And not once were you ever flustered. You were never bothered by it.
I was annoyed. And I just used that. You were like going out, I don't know where the hell you were going out, Skybar every damn night. Dude, you said one of the funniest things ever to me on that pilot. Because in between takes, you know, before I shaved my head, I was losing it back here, and they come in doing all this stuff. You said, Bill looks like a fighter in between rounds. When we were in between takes, everybody coming in. It was, out of all the shit people ever talked, I'm not saying it as funny as you said it, but that was one of my favorite things. You know, comedians, we love to get trash. So that was one of my favorite things anybody ever said to me. I still remember that.
I can say during that pilot, you and I, we had a fucking amazing time. We had a blast. And the show actually came out good. The show was funny. Of course, things don't work because they just don't work. But the show was fucking funny, man. And it's the last thing that people would expect to see.
Though?
Which part? What?
Because we niced it up.
Yeah.
What we wanted to do, what was going to happen? You were going to have a drinking problem and I was going to have something, but
we wanted it edgy.
Pilot.
Yes.
So we did a nicer version of it. You, me, and Bruce. And I go, okay, man. Right. Once we get the audience, then we'll start getting darker.
Then we'll go dark.
Yeah. We'll give them exactly what they want.
For now? Yeah, let's give it to them now.
Yeah. There's no way this isn't getting picked up.
It has to. What are you talking? You, me, Bird, look at us. We're right on the cusp. We're about
giving
to
them what they want. And then they told us to go fuck ourselves.
Fucking gave us a big boot. That's what they did.
Big boot. We got the old industry boot.
Bill Burr from Boston, ladies and gentlemen, if you do not know it.
Suburbs of Boston.
The suburbs of Boston.
Suburbs. They don't make movies about where I'm from.
What part is it exactly, Bill?
It's the South Shore, Canton, Massachusetts.
I know South Shore. I'm very familiar with it.
Music Circus?
I mean, I know what the fuck it is. I've been there. I've been around that part. I didn't hear anybody mention you when I was there either. We'll talk about that offline.
You just doing some road work? Were you like jogging down the street with your hands wrapped?
While you fucking around? I swear to God, I was. It's when
you know what's funny about you one time?
Intelligence.
I remember you trying to show me how fast you were boxing. And I'm sitting there going, Kev, I'm a 40-year-old white comedian. Like, this is not impressive. You should be able to touch me.
This is not
doing anything. I swear to God. For your listeners, we were in some stupid parking lot and he's going, I'm fast. Doing all this stuff. I'm just like, all right, Kev, you're fast. I get it. You almost seem taller when you're doing that, Kev. Wow, that's amazing.
Hey, I remember, man, I don't think there's anybody that I can annoy more than Bill Burr. I have probably triggered some of Bill Burr's angriest reactions in the New York City comedy club.
No. No,
I'm talking about of annoyance. I remember, Bill, you were when we were teasing you one
more
day.
More than Patrice? No.
No, Patrice used to piss you
more than Keith? No.
All right, you're right. I was probably in fourth or fifth place.
No, you were. You came in quick.
You Patrice came in definitely. Quick. Patrice used to get you. Patrice used to get you for sure. Patrice got you.
I never worried about you, but Patrice, if I knew he was going to be there, I would have like five things to say about him. Like I would came in like locked and loaded just to try and hit him.
I'd
say all five in the first minute, and then I was fucked.
You know what, man? Until this day, I still don't understand how a funeral happened and they turned it into a comedy club. Until this day, Patrice O'Neal, how they turned it
in. That funeral was great. That was one of the best shows I've ever been to.
I've never seen anything like that in my life. You know, for our listeners, Patrice O'Neal.
You bugged me at the funeral. You bugged me.
I did.
Because you showed up. You were wearing like a pair of Jordan 1s. You look like you're going to do a spot at Caroline's. I'm like, that's what I said. I go, Kev, this is a funeral, man. You're dressed like you're going to go do a spot at Stand Up New York. And that's what you said. You go, no, Bill, I'm dressed like the comic who made it. He said that at a funeral. I was like, I know this guy's an asshole. I didn't know he's that much of an asshole. You almost had me saying, well, I played Carnegie Hall one time. I almost said that at a funeral for my friend. That's how much of an asshole you are.
What the fuck? We went to Patrice O'Neal's funeral. Ladies and gentlemen, I mean, we had so many comedians. First of all, Patrice was one of the most loved guys, I mean, on the scene.
All right, let's not throw too much. He was also one of the most hated, too.
Yes, but he was a comics comic. He was a comics comic. The comics loved him.
If you were funny, you loved him.
Yes, if you weren't funny, you hated him. Because he let you know that you stood no chance in this business.
If you weren't funny, you stopped working the Village because that's where he was. You stayed uptown.
You didn't want any problems with that because he was the guy to go, ugh, this guy. Ugh. Ugh, God. Who let? Ugh.
I remember Eddie If one time said, dude, he goes, some nights I'll walk into the cellar and he'll yell across the room, hey, Eddie. And he goes, and I think, oh, he saw me. Dudes like that used to come into the upstairs at the Olive Tree, and they used to try to pick the first open seat to just, you know, slink in and stay away from them.
The only other person that I think holds a candle to Patrice's level of evil within like that angry tone is Nick DiPaolo. Nick DiPaolo is great.
Nick is a whole other level.
I'll tell you, on stage,
Corey Holcomb.
Corey Holcomb is fucking, you know.
It's amazing. Dude, the shit that guy can say.
Corey Holcomb has made me grab my chest.
Huh?
He's made me grab my chest. Like, you know, when you're uncomfortable, you just grab your chest when somebody says something because you don't know how to take it. Corey has made me touch my chest. Like, oh, God. Oh, that's.
He just sits there laughing. It's like, dude, this thing is literally, you have this audience on a thread right now, and that's going to snap, and they're going to rush the stage. And that's where he starts.
That's what he loves. That's what he loves.
Amazing. This is, and you talk about a guy who doesn't get enough credit. That's
Corey.
He's been a beast for 20 years.
But you know what, though? I don't want to say that he doesn't get credit because Corey's done well in his career. I think.
I just don't want to say that because I said it. Go ahead, Kiff. Trash me. I get it. It's your podcast.
I mean, listen, I mean, I just think that he's done fucking well. Corey's been a headliner.
Okay, maybe more white people should know who he is. There. Was that okay?
All right. Okay. I understand that part. There you go. That
makes more sense. Baby LeBron.
What's your problem? And I don't like that you're fucking. Where are you? What is this setup behind you? What fucking spiritual setting are you in right now?
Yeah, I have a house and I have children and I'm a father.
What the fuck does that have to do with church glass?
What am I supposed to do? All you fucking guys with your own vodka line and you have kids, it's fucking hilarious. The showgirls skipping through with the stripper pole. Oh, that's my son. Next to the stripper pole, I'm a dad. This is what the fucking house looks like, you idiot. I'm sorry. Let me put my fucking hoodie up. Yo, you know what I'm saying? It's just shit be crazy out there.
Bill's got you got Catholic church glass behind you. I don't know what you're doing. Bill, who's your like comic? I never asked you that.
Not you. I can tell you that.
Why the fuck? What is your problem? What are you talking about? Why am I not on your list?
You just don't do it for me. I like you as a person, Kev. I actually got on this podcast to break up with you. Kev, I really like you as a person.
But I'm done. I'm done.
No, I'm going to tell you something. No, Kev, a lot of people think you're an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to get that out there.
Yeah.
They think you're unsightly.
Wait, who are the people, Bill? Everybody.
Everybody's you're one of the most fun people to be around.
My God.
You are. You have great energy and all. Occasionally when you come down from the Hollywood Hills and you grace us with your presence, you are a fun guy. All right, every once in a while, you go back to the old camp. You pick your head up from the Hollywood Reporter and just be Kev again. I mean, yeah, you're a good guy. Who are the guys that I like?
Yeah, like who are your comedians that Bill Burr is like, fuck, man, no. You know who I love? Who?
Well, I already said Corey. Yeah. What are we talking? We're talking now or when I was growing up?
Which, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Well, obviously Pryor.
Okay.
For his ability to go to really dark, sad places and be dark and sad. I've seen a lot of people joke about dark and sad. He'll go into dark and sad, being dark and sad, and have the crowd almost ready to cry and then come back out again and have them laughing.
It's a great fucking analogy.
I've never seen, Mike Epps is the closest I saw doing some stuff like that one night. Mike Epps is another guy. As far as his ability to like paint a picture and also his whole vibe. Oh, wait a minute. You guys got a bunch of bullshit. I forgot about that.
I,
you can
give a shit. I don't have bullshit. Each other. In what world do I have
bullshit? I saw you gripping the microphone a little tighter. I'm sorry. I'm a white comedian, so I don't start a controversy.
In what world, Bill, do I have bullshit? You know that I can never have bullshit. Now, people have bullshit with me. That's
fine. Talking about the shit was online. You guys were, what do you people say? Snapping? Is that what you're doing?
You people, what are you doing?
Are you playing the dozens?
You're going to go down for that. You people, we heard an inside joke.
Look at my brand. My beard is as orange as Trump's hair. That was right on brand. That you people was right on brand.
No, I get what you're saying all about Mike. Mike is very funny. And painting the pictures, the stories, I get it. Who else?
I'm trying to avoid the obvious. The Chappelle's and all them. Dave Attell.
But I mean, it's not the obvious. I just want to know who you fucking like. Who are your people? It's not obvious.
I don't know why you're going to start yelling at me.
I mean, I'm just asking a question.
Trying to hang out, you know?
Where does Bill Burr's style come from? Because, Bill, what I think that you have somehow been able to do in
Like you don't believe in me.
No, I really do. In a craft Bill, I'm saying you have somehow managed to create your own style. Like, you have a unique approach to stand-up comedy. And it's not like anything that I've ever seen, because you walk this line of anger, frustration with great point of view and shock factor. It's like you're not the guy that's just looking to say the crazy shit to make the crowd go, whoa, I can't believe he said it. It's like when a comedian jokes, and to our listeners, I'm not saying that this is something to be joked about, so fucking listen to the example.
Oh, they got you scared, Kev.
Well, I've been walking on glass forever. Scared. If a comedian were to make a joke about—
What happened to the Kev I knew?
I'm trying to fucking be him.
Kev, I knew just said what he was thinking.
All right, watch this.
You just preempted your fucking point with an apology.
Because I fucking have to, Bill. Ugh. I'm sorry that I'm not the Kevin that you once knew. Fuck. Get off of my back, you goddamn.
I'm sorry.
You fucking.
You're right. I'm sorry. I forgot you became box office boy.
Jesus. I'm saying
what you get for creating a brand, you asshole. Now they got right. something.
I'm being punished for it. I'm being punished for it.
Yeah, you gotta be rogue.
I'm talking about you,
bald like me.
If a comedian were to make a joke about rape, right? 9 times out of 10, most of those comedians are doing it just to get a whoa from the crowd. I'm saying you don't do that. If you're angry about something, there's a point of view about it, and then your breakdown of it, the shock factors all always come back. They come back to a place of common sense, common ground, and your POV. And what I like is that you've never deterred from that. Like, there is nothing that has made Bill Burr not be Bill Burr on stage. And when I watched you on SNL, I watched the fucking monologue, man. I was
To curse, Kevin.
What'd you say?
There's no reason to curse.
When I say, I cuss a lot, you know that. It's because of my dad, though. It's not me. It's my fucking dad. See,
did you take responsibility for anything in your life?
Nope. Because it's not my fault. No. No, I cannot.
I fucking miss hanging out with you, man.
It's not my fault.
I really miss hanging out with you.
Your monologue on SNL, it was so dope because you had a good time doing it.
I had a great time.
That's what I took from it. I took from it that, yes, okay, he's saying something that nobody else will say, but he's right. And he's having a good time because he knows he's right. I'm not saying this for a shock factor, guys. This is why I love my job, because
you
I get to say
me
what I
about
want.
That shit, though, as I never, what? I never look at the fucking comments, right? But about a month out, I was like, all right, I think I got away with it. let me take a look. And this fucking jerk off was trying to explain why that white woman bit worked. And first of all, I thought I was going to get in trouble for saying I was happy Rick Moranis got sucker punched on the Upper West Side. Like, I thought, who doesn't love that guy?
So good. It was so good.
I knew that one during rehearsals when the band died laughing. When the band's laughing, it's like, all right, they might not laugh here, but at home they're laughing. So this guy tried to say the reason why that white woman bit worked is because he called himself out as a toxic white male. It's like, that's not why it worked.
It's not. That's
it worked. Because it's true. See, they don't have the advantage of me standing there seeing people, black people, Puerto Ricans, laughing before I get to me even saying that I'm a toxic. The part where I say I'm a toxic white male is to get white people like the dude who wrote that to come along for the ride. And they can feel, you know, okay. Because you know what white people do, you know. You see, they go after dead white people, so they can act. The safest thing you can do as a white person. I am outraged by that white person who is no longer alive.
That can say anything about what I'm saying.
Yes. Who can no longer hurt my career. Kevin, please. Black Lives Matter.
Yes, I get it.
I am upset with the vice president from 1750.
Yeah, that's it. It's the safe route. Yeah. There's nothing worse than a guy or a woman that goes to break down what you do. That has no idea what you fucking do. No. I don't think there's anything more frustrating than the person that wants to.
That's what the problem with the internet is. There's an answer for everything. It's not right, but there any question you have, the internet will fucking answer. But there's no qualifications for putting information on the internet. There's no libel. There's nothing. Everything can be presented as truth. And that's why if you give a moron a laptop, he's going to go on the internet and 20 minutes later, he thinks the world's flat.
Wow. I hope you guys realize how brilliant that just was. There's no qualifications.
That's what it is. I saw this guy. I have this thing in my podcast called Comment of the Week. Just like, because every week, you know, you're just reading shit on Instagram and just somebody, there's a certain level of ignorance, myself included. Mm-hmm. But then somebody, just the holy grail of ignorance. This person, you know, they were talking about wearing masks, not wearing masks, right? And this guy wasn't wearing a mask. That was the video. So people write, just wear a mask. And then all these people who have it figured out.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, whatever, sheep, whatever, you know, go off to slaughter. And this guy writes, he goes, all you need to do to know exactly what the government's doing is watch that movie V for Vendetta. That's what he said. It's like, oh, is that what I have to do?
I thought I had
to join the CIA and get a certain level of security clearance.
No.
Evidently, I just have to watch V for Vendetta.
It's right there. You guys don't even know it. It's right in the movie. Watch V for Vendetta, and then you'll know everything that's going on. Oh, thank you, man.
The government's just hoping you don't watch it.
Yeah, they have been putting this in front of us for years, hoping that we would see it. Nobody watches it.
Funny, I saw V for Vendetta. I think I have to go back and rewatch it. I don't think I was paying attention.
I've never fucking seen it, but now I have to after hearing that comment. All right, guys, we got to take a quick commercial break. And right now we're inside the mind of Bill Burr. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Comedy Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo,
the hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and US Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now back to Comedy Gold Mines, hosted by Kevin Hart.
We are back. We are back. We are back. And right now, we're talking to my guy, Bill Burr. Bill, where you at right now?
I'm gonna make sure I ask you correct. Where is Bill Burr at now?
With my house, Kevin.
Well, no, I'm saying with stand up.
Question.
With stand up.
What happens when you don't prepare for an interview and you just show up?
Why would I? My interviews are different. My interviews are fucking raw.
Yeah, man.
They're real.
Different vibe.
Yeah, I go off the motherfucking cuff. Where are you at now with stand up? Are you still in love with stand up? Are you as happy as you were in the beginning stages of it? Are you?
Hey, you remember that time Kevin Patrice told Kevin Brennan to shut his face?
Shut your face. He told him to shut his face. Shut your face.
And he just goes, Kevin, shut your face.
Please. Please. Shut your face. Where are you at?
The great ones.
Are you still in love with the craft?
Yes, I am. And I'm still trying to get better at it.
Nice.
So there's a bunch of things that I want to talk about in a more honest way. So that's where I was at before all this bullshit happened. And now I do tours and I do stand up next to fucking highways. I just did a tour, dude, through Texas. I did eight days, 16 shows. And the early show, it was always dealing with like rush hour traffic, at least in Dallas. In Dallas, trucks. It was such a great space, but it was better for like music.
Okay.
And then they had like, you know, it was one of those places was like outside. So it could like, you know, in regular times, it could hold like 3,000 people, but now they had like 120 there. So everybody's like all spread out in these little cattle things. And we were also on Final Approach to Love Field.
So you got planes coming down too?
Yeah, but there weren't as many because not as many people were flying. So,
okay.
But I was psyched that I was at least psyched that I finally got to land at that airport. You know, I kind of like aviation a little bit. And that's where JFK landed before they whacked.
How many shows? You did 16 shows? How long ago?
In 8 days. So I did like, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, so I did 4 in Austin, 4 in Houston, and I did 8 in Dallas.
Insane.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah.
But it felt, I'm willing to bet, it felt fucking amazing.
No, it didn't.
Really?
Because I was outside and it was cold out. And I literally halfway through the tour, I was joking with Club Soda Ketty. I was going, dude, I swear to God, if my whole career was outside, I would have been retired by now. I felt like I was tailgating like 8 days in a row, just standing out there. And you know, you're at a tailgate, you can throw a joke in and then have a burger. But like, I had to be the life of the party for like,
I don't want to see Burr pale. You're already the whitest white guy I know. I don't want to see
for me, Kev. You can't believe the fucking doors that open for me.
That's it.
Doors that people of color don't even understand.
That's it. You get them. You get them. They fucking open for Burr.
This is a fucking door.
It looks like it's going to heaven.
Feel the heat of my white hand.
I swear to God, it looks like there's something amazing behind that door. It really does.
There's nothing. It's just a white wall, Kev. Whiter than my fucking pasty face.
What you released a special, an amazing special. What's the goal for the next one? Like, is there with where we are?
I want to work the word heart into my special and spell it H-A-R-T so you can sue me.
I will fucking sue the shit out of you.
I know you will.
I'll sue the shit out of you for fucking, I don't know what the word is called. So I'm going to call my lawyer and find out what I'm supposed to say.
Call him up.
Yeah, I will fucking call him up. And I bet he tells me. I'm going to text it to you and let you know why you'll be sued.
Well, you're so huge at this point, Kev. To be sued by you would actually help my career.
Man, I get sued.
Just to have my name in the same sentence.
Do you know how much I get sued, Bill?
Well, you're an asshole, so you probably deserve it. I
don't even know half the lawsuits. I don't even know what they are. They just come. I get sued so fucking much. I get sued so much.
You get sued by the white people in your neighborhood because your Lamborghini's too loud when you come down the street?
First of all, I don't know if there's white people in my neighborhood because I don't talk to my neighbors.
Look at this fancy car thinking he's somebody in our neighborhood.
Yeah. I don't talk to none of them. I've never talked to a neighbor. I swear to God, I've never had a conversation with a neighbor.
You probably don't like your 47 fucking Mercedes vans out in front of your house. Dude, I pulled up to your house. I thought there was some shah in there from fucking Saudi Arabia. I was like, is this an oil man's house? Or is this a comic house? You had a caravan out in front of your house.
This is my fucking stuff. I got stuff. You got stuff. Don't act like you don't have stuff. You spend your money on shit. It's just different shit.
I do.
You got... Bill's got a kick.
I do. I just don't have anybody commission. I just don't commission an oil painting of myself to hang over the door for a guest.
What's your guilty pleasure? What is Bill Burr spending money on?
Aviation and.
That's right. You fucking fly.
Yeah.
How often are you flying now?
Like 2-3 times a week.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What plane are you flying?
I'm going for my instrument rating.
What plane are you flying?
I passed the written test. And then you have 2 years. I fly a Cabri G2. It's a French helicopter. I used to fly Robinsons. And, you know, those Robinsons are great helicopters. But, you know, it's technology that's from a lot of technology and aviation is old because it takes so long and so much money to get it approved. So these guys in France bought the R-22 that I was flying, took it to France, took it apart, analyzed it. Figured out all its weak points and then redesigned a helicopter. This thing is a work of art. It's basically a baby A-Star. It's like a 2-seater A-Star. A-Star is like what the cops and news people fly. It's the same type of thing.
How does Bill Burr get into flying? How did that happen?
Bill Burr was into conspiracy theory.
Okay.
Bill Burr speaking in the third person now.
Yeah.
I got into conspiracy theory and I was reading about how the world's money is just sort of a giant Ponzi scheme. You know, like you and I, if we start a Ponzi scheme, we're going to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're part of the Ponzi scheme, it's just like, no, fuck you. Fuck you, we're too big to fail and all that. So I started getting paranoid that I lived in this city. I swear to God, this is true.
I love it, go ahead.
So I started getting paranoid that I'm living in this city that technically shouldn't exist because we stole the water. It's a fucking desert. And it naturally, Kevin, before global warming catches on fire for 2 weeks every year, that is now up to about 6 weeks. And I'm like, I can't even get out of this fucking city, even when everything's working and the dollar hasn't collapsed. It still takes me forever. Can you imagine if the shit hit the fan? How the fuck do I get out of here? Up and out.
So you planned an escape. So you said, I'm going to learn how to fly a fucking helicopter. I'm going to go up and I'm going to get out. So when it hit, you just said, fuck it, I'm doing this. Did you tell your wife? Like, did you have to explain to your wife?
I took a couple of lessons just because I wanted to see if I was into it. And I immediately loved it. I am a closet gearhead.
Okay.
I don't, you know, I'm not good at fixing shit, but I will watch anything on the internet, somebody fixing something from a vacuum cleaner to one of my favorite cars to somebody doing a rebuild on a helicopter. I think what those people do is amazing.
Fascinating.
And yeah. Also, especially like in aviation cars and all that stuff, you got people's lives in your hands. So I got into that shit. So
have you bought one or attempted to buy one? Do you have any like planes or helicopters that you own?
Yeah, I own one.
Good shit, Bill. Good for you, man.
Well, because I wanted to have a say, and it cost a fortune to rent them. It's actually cheaper in the long run to own one. So I recently bought one. And what I absolutely love about it is, you know, if you have an engine failure, you do what's called an auto rotation, which is now, rather than the main rotor drawing the air into the disc, it's now the helicopter falling. It's the air rushing up underneath is what keeps it turning. So you have to fall at a certain speed to keep it turning, because if you're going too slow and your RPMs drop, then you're going to die. So on the R22 that I flew, I felt like the window was like this. This is the low RPM horn.
Okay.
This is overspeeding it, which you wouldn't give a shit if you did that in a real situation. I mean, it cost you some money, but it was just, you really had to get precise. So I got those down. And now with this one that I have, it's like this. And I
feel
like,
so it's a big difference
coming down on a cloud. People don't understand, like, if you stay up on them, how safe they are. Dude, you can literally be flying this way, see your spot, stop in the air, turn around, nose it over, get your speed back, come down, hit your flare, and then level out. And what I like is you can bleed off all your forward airspeed, which is huge to me. Because I feel like, because this is what people don't understand, is planes and helicopters, this is going to sound obvious, but you don't really think about it. They're not designed to hit anything.
So helicopters.
Or planes, yeah. There's no crumple zones or airbags. Like, it's all about weight and balance. It's designed to get up and fly.
Yeah.
So that's why you'll see these guys will get it on the ground. And then, you know, they get hurt really bad. It's like back in the day, like cars in like the 1950s and shit, there was no crumple zones and you'd hit something and the steering wheel, everything came back.
It just came inside.
Yeah, you squirted out the side like toothpaste. So now they got it worked out. The engine drops down. They somehow, with the physics, it goes around you. Like, the level of shit that you can hit in a car and still be pretty okay is incredible compared to back in the day. But aviation is still like that. You can never forget that. So it's all about, you know, like bleeding, getting that forward airspeed to just.
I just love the fact that Bill Burr is in the aviation. I love the fact that your hobby is flying. And here's the thing, Bill, the whole point behind this fucking podcast. I was having a conversation with some friends and I said, you'll never meet people more interesting than comedians. I said, we're the most complex individuals alive. I'm serious. I've never had.
You really think that? I don't know.
Fuck yeah. Look at the difference in the individuals that we know. We can call them crazy. We can call them smart. We can call them people who have conspiracy theories. We can have strong political figures in comedy that are so adamant about one thing and not another. We have such a different level of personnel in our business. And people only look at the personnel as if they're just funny. But they're the most complex people walking the face of this earth. Some of them are dark.
I think two things.
Some are happy.
Well, two things that make, I think, people in show business fun to talk to is the level of travel you do. And you can travel and be closed-minded and be boring as shit to talk to. But if you have your eyes open and you meet all these different people, there's a combination of that and the fact that if you came out of prison, okay, there's like two or three jobs that you can just go out and do, and they don't even ask what if you did anything. You could kill five people somehow in a technicality after 12 years in jail, get out of jail, go down to an open mic, and get on stage. And be like, all right, man, do 5 minutes. Yeah. And then you're just up there. And then when people found out you killed five people, 9 out of 10 comics would be like, yo, dude, you should talk about that on stage, man.
You got to do a bit about
it. That'd be some prior shit. Yeah.
You got to discuss it.
Yeah. Yes. You can do that. I think you also can get into sales. Like, you could kill five people, get out on a technicality, and then be selling Kias by the end of the week.
Probably not cars, because they're going to do a background check, but like Tupperware or like, you know, some type of door-to-door sales you definitely could do.
Salesmen are super, really, because they have to read people my brother was in sales, fucking amazing, one of the greatest salesmen I have ever seen. And he had a buddy of his, he had a thing like when he would be selling health insurance, he goes, if I knew I wasn't getting the sale, he goes, I would just start staring at the guy's hairline. just make the guy all fucking uncomfortable and shit. He'd be sitting there going, yeah, uh-huh, really? No, I understand it. I understand it. You know, well, maybe you can work out something. And the guy would get all, you know, touching his hair and shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we're inside the mind of Bill Burr.
This is Comedy Gold Mines with host Kevin Hart.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and U.S. Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Now more from Kevin Hart on Comedy Gold Mines.
We are back.
I didn't know this was serious.
Why? What do you mean you didn't know, Bill? I have a channel. You do know I have a channel, Bill.
Oh, Kevin, you don't have a channel. Serious?
I do have a channel. You. No, Bill, I have a channel.
You know, I swear to God, you fucking what? God, comedians.
I mean, what do you want me to do, Bill? Laugh out loud. Go to radio. Freedom. It's my channel.
I want you to run to freedom and start your
right
own
now. Kevin Hart, Laugh Out Loud Radio.
Yeah. Kev, you slip on one fucking bullshit thing off there. They're gonna, you think that's not your channel. That's their
Kevin,
channel.
Kevin Hart could go, but my other shows would stay.
No,
though. My channel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see?
Okay.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, look, Bill, I will tell you stuff. You ask me, I'll tell you. Stop making me talk about my personal business. We're not inside the mind of me.
That's why you have to fucking apologize, because you get in business with suits. Don't get in business with these people. Start.
Why do you hate suits so much? Why do you hate them?
Because of my experiences with them.
Are there any suits that you like, Bill?
I liked Armani for a while.
Okay. All right, Bill. That's not what I'm... Jesus Christ. What's your relationship?
Well, I don't know. I have empathy for him. I actually have empathy for him. Dealing with us crazy people. But, you know, I mean, having to audit people and then also while still being friendly and creating shit with them at the same time is it was sort of a weird dynamic as a comic where you just your whole thing is to be like that's bullshit. I'm saying that's bullshit. And then when you get into that thing, you have to be like, and they're like, oh, that's the other side of the building. That's those kooks down in accounting. You and I, we're bros. Gotta deal with that shit. And be like,
what's your relationship with your agents like?
It's wow. Better.
It's better. Oh Jesus. What just happened? Where did you just go? You just went to a dark place.
No, because I was thinking, should I tell this funny story? I'm going to tell. No, I love my agent, but I'm not going to lie to you. I was at a premiere one time and he came up to me, he said, hey man, you killed it. Great job. And I was like, yeah, dude, you were great too. I thought he was in the movie. And then that's when we were just like, well, maybe we should, I only talked to him on the phone. So I forgot what he looked like.
Oh God, he thought he was an actor. He thought his agent was an actor.
He's a good-looking guy. What can I tell you? Great head of hair.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Bill, man, you really crushed it, man. Good for you. You too, man. Wait, what? Bill, you're kidding, right?
Like, no, so Bill, man. I'm your agent. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm sorry. He didn't give a shit. We that's like our running joke now.
How long have you been with him?
Whenever my booking agent went over to that agency is how long.
Okay.
I came.
Got you. Three we share years. A lot of... Bill, you know, we share a lot of the same representation we have for quite some time. You do know that, don't you?
Well, Kev, if you called me a little more often and shared some of your life with me, I guess
I don't have to call you. You should know that. You should know. I mean, it's I don't understand how you wouldn't know. I know because I ask. And I was like, oh, that's dope. Bill's got a fucking great team. Everybody knows it, Bill. Yeah, what are you talking about? Everybody knows it. You got a fucking great team of people around you. I know that because they're my team.
What's wrong? Playoffs.
This year, you know what? I'm a little definitely I'm heavily disappointed. in the NFC and just what we represent for football right now. It's kind of disgusting.
Oh, the East. That was just one of the rare times where all five teams were either rebuilding or had a horrific injury.
I mean, it was disgusting this year. It really got to the point where it frustrated me. So this year,
6-10 almost won that division.
It really bothers me. But I think it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to beat the Chiefs, man. I think the Chiefs are going to fuck around and come out of it again.
I think with that Patrick Mahomes is he has that he not only does he have like all the talent and the gifts and all of that, but he also has that charmed life thing.
Yeah.
You know, when I used to watch Derek Jeter, I was like, this guy is like, he's unbelievable. He's like, he's everything you'd want in a player. And then he also just had like that magic thing. Like, remember, I don't know, you watch like baseball when that guy overthrew the cutoff man and he ran, he was like over by like the on deck circle on the other side, on the first base side, he plays short and he just grabbed the ball and went like that. And the dude on the A's didn't slide and he got the out. And it's just like, I can't say that. Cause that was just like a heads up play, but he just has that.
He's got that thing.
I just see Patrick Mahomes so many games he should lose and they still win because like he just has, it's beyond being good.
Well, I'm going to
tell you. Beyond being good. He's that guy is blessed.
Russell Wilson has it too.
I love Russell. Russell Wilson's my favorite.
Russell Wilson has it too. But you're a baseball guy though, right? You're not a football guy first. You're a baseball guy.
I'm a hockey guy.
And you're a hockey guy first. Boston. Yeah, that's right.
It's Boston. You said it
wrong. Boston.
No, that's wrong.
It's Boston.
It's B-A-W, if you want to say it right. You don't have to.
Boston.
But they kind of ruined the sport. They got too much of the fighting out of it and shit. I wish they just had accepted the fact that they were a rogue sport and that, you know, the owners were just going to be multimillionaires. But for some reason, people always want more. So they're trying to make as much money as the NFL guys and hold people hostage for stadiums and all that bullshit that the fucking NFL does.
Did you ever play
hockey?
Yeah.
No, it's too expensive.
Did you ever play any sports?
No. I played baseball. I played a little bit of football, and I played pond hockey.
What the fuck is that?
Jesus, Kev. Kev, you know something? If you don't know something, it's okay. Nobody's putting
pressure. What the fuck is that? Pond hockey? What is that?
Well, there's a pond, and when it used to get cold enough before global warming, you would go out and you'd play pickup hockey. It was the shit.
Oh, sounds safe.
It was the shit. This is what you do. You take the biggest rock you can find, and you throw it up in the air. And if it landed on the ice and slid, and no crack, you know, a couple of cracks, you were fine. That's how you would test it.
That, to me, is insane. And that shows what the kids today are lacking. There is none of that. The kids don't have the balls to play like that today. It doesn't exist because he's fucking.
I don't know. I think they're just doing new, different, dangerous things. You've seen these kids? They do these front flips and back flips and walk.
No, I see kids. I see kids TikTok. I see kids fucking TikTok. That's what I see. I see kids TikTok, IG. I see them live stream. I don't see kids fucking do that. I can't tell you the last time I've seen my kids go outside without me making them go outside with me. Or for us to do something. My kids don't just say, we're going outside.
In defense of them, if we had what they had, we wouldn't have gone outside either.
Rightfully so. And I think, of course, that's part of the problem.
Dude, video games were two lines with like a ball.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, they're in the world.
Yeah, the creative the creative is out of this fucking world for them. All right, with that being said, as a parent, does that make you want to pull back some of the things that are available for your kids to use and play with today? Are you going to be one of the parents that's no games?
I'll try to do my best to have a balance because you don't want your kid to be like dressed like a Quaker and churning butter. That's just a recipe for an ass kicking at school. They got to know what's going on.
Yeah.
But both of my kids are going to know how to drive. I have an old truck. I have a 68 F-100 that ships three on the column.
Okay.
They're going to know how to do that. They're going to know how to change the oil on it.
What's important that you feel important,
like knowing how to catch and throw a ball, knowing how to hit important. A ball, you know,
true story. You ready for this, Bill? True story.
Learn how to ride a dirt bike. Like, you know, when I ride a motorcycle and shit. I like that Rambo stuff. Like, you know, when you watch like Rambo, they used to always make a joke how no matter what mode of transportation he showed up to, he knew how to use it.
Knew how to do it.
Yeah. So I would like them to do, be able to do as much as of that type of stuff to just kind of see like a world outside of the house. Because I definitely, you know, I learned how to braid my daughter's hair, right? Because I just didn't want to be her white dad, you know?
So. I can tell you that a friend of mine, this is like one of the most embarrassing things that I've ever seen, right? And he just had to laugh about it. I was like, yo, you know, me and my family, we got bikes. We love to go out, man, and we ride. We go to like these little bike paths. And we'll do like, you know, just a nice little family ride. I said, you should come. My friend's got like 4 kids. He's like, you know what? Yeah, that would be cool. We've never done anything like that. Let's do it. He says, I got to get his bikes. I said, well, come on, go down to the bike store. I said, my guy there, he'll give you guys like a nice little discount and stuff. So we go down there to get the bikes. His son is like 16 years old. He gets the bike. The whole family's ready to go. His son gets on the bike. Bill, his son could not ride a bike. I looked at him. I said, are you fucking kidding me? I said, you never taught him how to ride a bike? By the way, my friend is filthy rich. Filthy.
Of course he is.
He goes, he says, Kev, he says, you know I'm a great father. He said, but this just made me realize that I missed some things. He had to say, I can't go today. Spent the day teaching his 16-year-old son how to ride a bike.
Dude, I'm not going to lie to you. That right there is my biggest fear as a father.
That's a fucking real thing.
I don't want to miss any of that stuff. And what I love, what I've been able to change, right? Because every generation, you know, you want to change, keep the stuff that work, changes. What I love about my kids is my kids are not afraid of me. Mm. They respect me, but they're not afraid of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
when I was growing up, you were afraid of your dad.
Absolutely.
Your dad Absolutely. Came home. He came in the front door. You went out the back door. Like yeah. you just avoided that dude. If he was talking, everybody had to shut the fuck up
and listen. Just,
yeah. So, and I've realized that so much of my anger came from the way I'm built and then being in that overbearing old school style. Because my dad's a great dad. It's just like, There weren't like videos yeah. teaching you how to be a better. He learned that. Sit down, shut the fuck up. You know? Well, why do I have to? Because I fucking said so. Like, it's just like you do that to somebody for 18 years, they're gonna come out a little resentful. And then the greatest shit, this is the greatest shit, is then when you bring that shit up later in life in your 30s to your parents, they always just say the same shit. Ah, oh, I never did that.
My dad.
This is what I've learned, dude, is my perception of my childhood and my parents' perception of my childhood, neither one of those is true.
Wow. It's
somewhere in the middle. Because kids put an unfair amount of weight on their parents because their parents are their universe. So little things to them.
Wow.
Hey, can I get this car? Nah, come on. Nah, stop it. Like, that's your world. Like, but that was the car I wanted. Yeah, and then, yeah. like, they're in their 30s. And I wanted that car. Yeah. And, and then they're sitting there going, like, motherfucker, I had 5 kids. I was just trying to get through the day. So I think what I learned from that is I have to understand that little things are big things to my kids. So all I have to do is listen and, you know, let them say what they have to say, assess what they're saying. You know, obviously if I still don't want them to be able to do something, if I don't think it's right, I'll still say no, but I will listen to them. And if I fuck up, I apologize.
So well, like my dad is on key. Same thing. Same exact thing you're saying, right. But it's like, my dad doesn't have any realization of the shit that he did. Now me and my brother, we don't really give a fuck, but my brother was the one who was really affected. No, my brother was affected, not me. Like, my dad stole my brother's car.
Listen, from the bottom of my heart, you're a fucking mess.
I'm a fucking, what are you talking about?
You are, Kev. You are. You,
I'm not even close to a mess.
The reason why you work so goddamn hard, there's two reasons. One, you want to be successful, all that shit, right? But you also, when you're fucking occupied, the smoke can't catch up with you. That's what I found in this pandemic.
All my shit can't catch up to
me. It can't catch up with you because you're doing the next thing and you keep it. It's just behind you. And all it takes is a fucking pandemic
to sit me down.
No more stand-up gigs. And you fucking clean the house and you threw out all your old shit. And then you're just sitting there. And then this melancholy, like from the first time in like maybe like a decade and a half, I felt depression
start really?
To come up on. Yeah, I was just like, what the fuck is this? I thought I was past all of this. And it wasn't. Like, I built this great life, but I didn't deal with this other shit.
When you sat down, you felt like all of that shit came or was able to catch up.
Yeah. Everybody was quarantined. The phone stopped ringing. There was no more emails. I mean, there was occasional bullshit or whatever, but it was just like I had nothing to do.
Wow.
And I just sat there and this fucking shit came in like a marine layer. It just fucking settled in me. And my wife was up. She was, what's going on with you? I was like, I got, I don't know, man. Like, I got the fucking, the blues or something. I don't know what.
I got the DPs. I got the pressies. I got the pressies, honey.
So I played drums too, which is great to, I
guess. Let off some steam.
And also sort of avoid what you're feeling.
Okay.
Once again.
You're Will Ferrell on Step Brothers.
Yeah, it is. Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, that fucking movie. That movie was one of the funniest movies, not only because me and my wife thought it was hilarious, my mother-in-law thought it was stupid. And she sat there and watched this with us. And she was going, this isn't fun. You think this is fun? And it just made it even funnier. And then I knew that part where he was going to put his balls on the drum and that they were going to show his balls. It's one of my favorite things ever.
I don't think I can. I definitely know that I'm not a depressed individual, but what you said makes sense actually though, about like moving so fast and shit never having a chance to catch up to you. And if it did have the opportunity, what effect on you would that have? All the shit that acts.
Now, how much quiet time do you have over the course of a week? Like when you ride in your car, can you sit in your car and ride in it, not be on the phone and not have the radio on? I already know the answer to this shit. I used to tease about you on the phone when we were doing the pilot. You.
I got, if it's not the radio or the, no, I'm not even gonna lie. No.
Yeah, because the demons all of a sudden, like what made you become a comic starts coming up. Now I'm kind of at this crossroads where I'm sitting there. Do you live with your demons? Mm. Is there a way to face them and they do go away? Because that just sounds like some Dr. Phil shit.
Yeah, but go away.
One of the funniest inadvertent comedies I've ever seen in my life. I love the Dr. Phil show.
But the fine, go away.
To stop doing heroin. And they're like, okay, thanks, Philip.
I'm fixed. But what do you mean when you say demons go away? Like, do you really believe that they go away or do you just put them to rest? You can put it to rest, but if you want to wake it up, you can wake it the fuck up. There is no go away.
I like how you just said that. That just got me amped up.
Yeah, like
wake the fuck up. Because come on, Kev, let's go.
Yeah, but it's true. Like there is no go away. You know, a person that was an alcoholic and decided to stop drinking, well, they put that alcoholic demon to sleep. But if they go and take a shot one day, well, that alcoholic demon is going to fucking get up. So it's how you deal with the things that you know are your worst.
I don't think that you can. When people say, I let all my childhood shit go. It's like, you can't.
Nah, yeah, you don't.
You dealt with it. It's just, it's like, I don't think pain goes away. I think it's always still there. It's just, you're able to function more and more with the distance from the pain. But if you go back and relive it, that emotion is still gonna be in there. But, I did learn, though, this is one of the hardest things I learned, that crying is a valid emotion. And it's so funny that men don't do it. Mm-hmm. And you try and stop it. And that's what the shit just sits here. And the next thing you know, you're putting together a bicycle on Christmas and it's not working. Out. And then that shit that you should have cried about, that shit starts coming out. And people are like, where is this coming from? It's just like, I got my ass kicked when I was 8 and I never dealt with it. So now
I'm going to tell you when I cried. My, and this is the only cry that I can truly remember in like the past I'm going to say 7 years. Outside, no, my kids being born, those are like the little cool tears where you're just welling up. But I'm talking really cried. After my accident, when I got home from the hospital, I got home and I walked outside by myself. Nobody was with me. That's the only time. Was with me. I broke the fuck down so bad because when I walked outside by myself, it was the first like real steps that I've taken without people being around me and that you okay? You need anything? What can we do? How's that feel? Like, no questions. I did it by myself, but it's the first time that I realized I was like, oh fuck. It was really almost over.
You know what the cruelest thing about life is? Wouldn't you love to be able to stay in that mind space, that headspace, and just really appreciate just being able to walk outside?
Yes, absolutely.
And you were so happy that you could just do that, and you had this house, beautiful wife, beautiful kids, and it could bring you to tears rather than getting comfortable.
And getting used to it, constantly needing
new stimulation. Well,
that's fucking
the last
crazy,
time,
man.
Last time I had to let it go was one of my great friends died back in August. So I'm able to talk about it because I just cried for a week. I just said, fuck it. I got kids now. I can't have this grief sitting in me.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and I really learned, and I actually think that that's one of the reasons why women outlive men is because it's socially accepted. They can break down in a fucking Fuddruckers, packed Applebee's.
It's okay.
Nobody's going to judge them. No, people come, they're going to come over and comfort you.
It's okay.
If you break down in an Applebee's as a man.
What the fuck is his problem? Jesus.
Yeah, uncomfortable. Oh, Jesus.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I think
that all of that shit, and it sits on your chest, and then one day you're walking, you fucking have a heart attack. You just keel over.
I love your mind, Bill. And, you know, we can fuck around and we talk shit all the time. And I know for a fact that you're a friend. I know for a fact.
Yeah, I know for a fact after this podcast, I probably won't hear from you for about 6 years.
So?
And the next time I see you, you're going to be like, I love you, Bill. Bill, yeah. I've always loved you. Yeah.
What does that mean? That's how we operate. Doesn't change.
How you operate. I've come to accept that with you. You're going to put your hoodie up and you're just going to keep plowing forward.
Yeah.
You're going to say some really sincere, heartfelt shit to me. Yeah. And then I'm not going to see you for about 18 months.
Nah, we'll see each other. I'll bump into you something. What are you talking about?
You know where the truth was in what you just said?
What?
That pause right before you started talking.
That's the only truth of what
that,
I just
that
said.
That was the truth of what you just said.
It's not true, Bill. I fucking love you, man.
Now you're not even looking at me. You just broke eye contact.
You, Bill.
I'm all over you right now, Kev. Full court defense.
Bill, no, that's
3 second violation.
Bill, stop. What do you stop using these references? Ladies and gentlemen.
You're a black fella. I figure I'd talk about basketball.
Ladies and gentlemen, you guys just had the goddamn privilege and pleasure of getting into the mind of one of the fucking best to do it, man. I'm talking about Bill Burr. Bill, before we fucking say goodbye, I mean what I say, dude. You're truly one of the fucking good guys. Like, you're genuine. You're unapologetically you, and you always have been. And I'm always going to love and appreciate you for that. Dude,
from a distance, though.
I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, I know you're busy. I'm just fucking with you. I miss hanging out with you, dude. I miss the fucking old days when we were all
fucking
broke.
Just literally just at a table. Shit. At a table with a sandwich and just talking shit.
You guys criticized the way I ate. I had to eat before I came to the cellar after a while.
Oh my God. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to see something that just looks like it's inappropriate. Bill Burr eating a buffalo wing is something that will.
Not inappropriate. I was going on. This is how bad the cellar was. I was going to go on stage. I had my beard was fuller. I didn't want sauce in my face. So I was sitting there. I was trying to eat the wing. I was going like. Like that, and then this asshole saw it.
Bill looks sick.
The crashing started.
I said, "Bill's dying."
Then I went down. Then I came back up, and it continued. And then for the rest of my time there, every time I would have mashed potatoes as it was going in my mouth, everybody's head. Little Bill,
Oh, Jesus.
Anything where the potatoes are sitting on that spoon.
Bill's sick. That's what we said. Bill's sick. He's not telling us. Bill's dying. He's dying.
He said Bill eats his chicken wings like he's dying. You know when somebody says some shit, you're like, oh, that's not going away. That wasn't just a quick little jab. That was an overhand right, and my ears are going to be ringing for the next 2 weeks as people talk about
it. Oh, God. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this episode. Once again, please, please appreciate the mind that you guys just got to get into. I'm talking about my friend, Bill Burr. Bill, I love you. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.